just huge. I mean, it's like a man. It's big.
Kane, son.
You still don't understand what you're dealing with, do you? Perfect organism.
Just tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study. Not to bring back. But to wipe them out.
That's the plan. You have my word on it.
All right, I'm in.
Let's rock!
Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
Happy Alien Day from Perfect Organism, the Alien Saga Podcast. Welcome to Perfect Organism, the Alien Saga Podcast. I am your host, Jamie Prater, and today I'm joined by a special guest, Dan Dewhurst. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
And happy and a belated happy birthday.
Well, thank you so much. And happy Alien Day, everyone. So I'm recording this
yes.
a few days after my birthday, but you're not hearing this until 3 weeks later. But thanks for coming on the show, Dan. Before we get into your love of Alien and everything, I just want to kind of set the stage for our listeners. I'm interviewing Dan today because Dan worked on Prometheus. He was in a scene that was eventually cut from Prometheus, and he's going to talk about that. But before we get into that, I want to find out, and Dan is an actor in the industry. You are stationed in London, but you go all over the world, correct?
Yeah, we met in LA, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Mm. Almost 2 years ago. A little over a year ago, because it was November of 2022. Yeah, that was a great time.
It was the Dark Crystal 40th year anniversary, I think we met at.
Yeah. So I'm all things Dark Crystal geek. Not so much as much as I was before, but just through some friends throwing events, I ended up in a Dark Crystal convention in Burbank in November of 2022. And of course, I had known Dan, had worked on the Age of Resistance, and so he and I kind of hang out, and then he drops a bombshell on me, two months ago. He's like, oh yeah, I was in Prometheus. I'm like, what? And so here we are on Alien Day talking about it.
It's a wonderfully small world.
It is. So as we get into this, let's just talk about Alien and the Alien movies for a little bit. How'd you get into that? What was your first one? What was that like for you? Are you a fan?
What was the first one? I mean, I'm a massive fan. I don't know which was the first one I saw. I'm going to say maybe Aliens. I've got two older brothers. When you got older brothers, you watch films that are way beyond your age certificate. Right. And the age certificate thing is a bit different here in the UK as it is to the States. So I think we have a much lower threshold for violence, I think. And I think you guys have a much lower threshold for things of a sexual nature. So because Alien it wasn't particularly sexual, but it was quite violent, I think it was maybe 15 over here. I mean, the thing is that these things have also, we've become massively kind of desensorized as well. So like, and people they're pushing those age certifications, like what the directors can get away with now within that. So what was an 18 when I was a kid, you know, would probably be a 15 or a 12 now, which is that's how we certify it in the UK. I know you guys have PG-13 and different things. So I had two older brothers, and they had got a VHS of, I mean, all those amazing sci-fi films when we were growing up. And what a time. Alien, Predator, Robocop, Terminator. It was a golden age. And I just loved it. I mean, it had such an effect on me. I used to play Alien in school, in primary school, that's like junior school, and I don't even know how we would do it, and I don't even know if it was just me and my sad friends or if it was a thing, but I just remember every lunch break, we were, some of us would be aliens, some of us would be marines, and we would sort of role play these ridiculous games every lunch without fail. And if it wasn't that, it was, you know, it's Predator or Terminator or Species or something, but Alien was always my favorite.
The original.
So the original Alien is my favorite. Okay. Yes. Although I love Aliens. It's an Aliens is a very interesting one, because as an actor, a lot of people don't like sequels in general, and most sequels don't really add anything. They're not better than the original. In fact, they can really kind of dirty a great film's name. And then Aliens and I think Terminator 2 are often used as maybe even The Godfather as well as examples of where one of the few examples where a sequel is so good, it justifies this kind of let's get on the bandwagon culture. That's not the word. Bandwagon. let's start making more. So so I loved Aliens. I even loved Alien 3, which I know can be a controversial one, but I thought that what they pulled off was amazing. And the theme of, you know, you just got the one alien, but if you've got no weapons, what can you do? I thought it was a very, very strong concept. Love Prometheus, despite the fact I was cut from it. I find it's hard to believe. I still left the cinema with a big smile from cheek to cheek. I really enjoyed it. And then, you know what, and I liked Resurrection too in parts, but the latter ones, which this is not going to go down well, because I know you're a huge fan, Jamie, but they weren't so much my cup of tea, maybe because actually I expected so much from them. You know, maybe I put them on such a...
Which one?
Well, I think any of the ones beyond Prometheus, for me, haven't hit the same heights. I found them quite hard to get into.
Yeah,
Covenant. I was a bit annoyed about. I found the sort of scientists hard to believe. You know, when they're sort of smelling all the spores, and he's supposed to be like there's some sort of botanist, isn't he? And explode. And I just thought anyone who has any understanding of anything in nature would not stick their face in that. There's nothing scientific about just sticking your face in this very suspicious looking. And for me, that makes me unplug when I try to get into films. I don't go into films trying to nerd out and hate them, but for that it just made me unplug at so many moments, which is very difficult to talk to you about, because I think it's one of your favorites.
No, so my favorite is Alien 3. Cool. my next favorite is Alien, and then of course I love Aliens. It's great, but I think the first Alien and Alien 3 really have a lot in common. I'm not a fan of Prometheus. I think that there's amazing things in it, there's amazing ideas in it. I think it's just weighted down by some really bad dialogue and bad characters. But I think that there's some really, I think that there's a masterpiece of a film in Prometheus.
That's a lovely way of putting it.
What I love about it, I love about it. I could watch it, but Covenant, I like the first 45 minutes, even though it's very derivative of Alien. The first 45 minutes, it feels like an Alien film. And then by the time when David gets reintroduced, I just feel like it just kind of falls off a cliff. And you could tell Ridley Scott wasn't as interested in making Covenant as he was in Prometheus. But
well, he's quite also, you know, in all fairness to Ridley, I mean, he's quite old these days. You've got to bear that in mind. Think of your grandparents.
Yes.
And he's a lot older than them for most of us.
Well, not mine. Mine's 94. He's like, is Ridley like 86? But still, to your point, yes, he has aged, and but he's still out there making movies. He's working on Gladiator.
My favorite director.
Yeah. He's done really great things.
He's done marvelous things. And I tell you a story. When I started out in this industry, and I cared so much what other people thought, and I had this quite nasty director turn on me, and he said he was going to blacklist me around the industry. And I was like, oh my God. You know, I was really upset about it. Nowadays, I wouldn't be so bothered. But when I was starting out, my job was the most important thing in the world. Now I just try to be a reasonable human being and realize the job's just a job. But I went to the union and I said, look, I'm really worried. This guy's threatening me. And he says he's going to blacklist me around the industry. You know, I'm not going to work. What can I do? And the advice I received was, look, Dan, don't worry about it. There's only three people in the industry that can actually blacklist you. And they don't threaten you. They don't tell you. The phone just doesn't ring. Okay. So the ones who are shouting loudest about it is because they've basically got no power. And anyway, so he listed off these three people. And this was such a long time ago now. And I can't remember the three of them, but I remember one of them. And one of them was Ridley Scott. And I remember thinking, wow. And then he also said to me, we don't blacklist actors at this union, but we do blacklist production companies who threaten actors, so we're certainly blacklisting them. So I had a somewhat happy ending.
No radio, no heat source. Nobody's home. There is nothing in the desert
and no man needs nothing.
What was that?
Just something from a film I like.
Speaking of your beginnings, I mean, I don't know how long you've been in the industry, but can you talk about how Prometheus happened for you?
Yeah,
what
sure.
Was that like?
I haven't been in the industry that long. I mean, a lot of people sort of start very, very young, and I'm quite thankful I had a normal childhood and went out and did other things and didn't get too swept up in stage school too early on. I mean, that's great if, you know, if that's your cup of tea. But I think you see very few child actors come through the industry unscathed. They all normally have some sort of psychological problems. I mean, even the people I know who've had a good experience of it, they sort of talk about having to miss out on a lot of stuff from their childhood because of fear of getting injuries and not being able to work. And, you know, I just think you've got your whole life to be an actor. So just let kids be kids, right? So I got into this industry after university, kind of in my 20s. And I started off doing a lot of movement stuff. So, which is how we're going to get into Prometheus. So I used to do a lot of martial arts. And I was with an agency then called W Athletic. They're not around anymore. They're called W now. actually, I'm not even with them anymore. They dropped me from their books. But back then I was with them. And I was doing a martial arts show with another actor called Chris Howard, who a lot of people might know him as Ken Masters from Street Fighter. He did a very cool Street Fighter short that did famously well. I think he got a commission to something quite big, and it was included in the computer games, I think, later on. So Chris and I were doing this martial arts show, and there was a sort of group of us, and we used to do quite a lot of these kind of martial arts style bookings around the industry. It was a really fun time, actually. Anyway, they wanted two guys to do kind of kendo, kind of Bushido type stuff. And the idea was that it was, I think the codename for it was anthropology. And it was supposed to be the study of humans throughout time. So the idea is the aliens are kind of looking at us and looking at all our rituals and the ways we fight and celebrate and love and dance and all sorts of things. And during the sequence, they wanted this kind of Bushido fight scene, and Chris and I got it. I don't know whether we auditioned for it, whether we got it directly or what, but it got, you know, we shot for several days, and then it got cut down to moments, and then those moments were just like a lot of Prometheus were completely cut, and that was our little dalliance with Prometheus. I'll tell you something else as well. We were supposed to be able to keep the armor. I remember that we got slightly shafted on the deal because something happened. I don't know if we went into mad overtime but there was some sort of negotiation where they said, okay, look, you can keep the costuming, which was worth a lot of money because it was the real deal. It was this real kind of sort of contemporary samurai armor. You can see it in the clip. We never got it. So we took this hit on the fee because we're like, we're going to be able to keep all this incredible stuff, which we're going to love forever. What an artifact, this thing from the film. And also it was this beautiful armor and we were really into martial arts. And yet we didn't get any of it. That's just the way. We should have taken the money.
Crazy. So where did you end up filming this?
Where? We shot it in London. So a lot of the time with these big films, they, if they have a huge production like this one was, they would outsource it to other production companies. And we were in a little sort of splintered off group and we shot our scene with all the other scenes within that sort of section of the film.
For people who don't know what that process is like in terms of being on a large set like that, being a part of a large production, what is the prep time? Like, do they call you in for fittings and for measurements? Like, what's that like to be in process to be in a film of that size?
Yeah, there's a lot of prep. So you are called in for fittings and lighting tests and all sorts of things. And it's usually a real pressure cooker situation. A lot of screaming people, a lot of angry people. I imagine it's a sort of domino effect. I think what happens is people come into the industry and on the production side, people shout at them. And then when they come up, they sort of feel like, well, I've been shouted at for so many years. I'm going to do some of the shout. I've earned it, you know? And I really hope that if anyone in production is watching this, that they will break that cycle and not come into it so stressed, because I don't think it really helps anyone. But most film sets are very, very stressy. And as a young actor, that can be very intimidating and nervy. But I would say now, I mean, someone once said this to me, and it's kind of become my go-to expression for working in the industry, which is, it's all PR, it's not ER. You know, we're just shooting stuff, we're making entertainment, or we're selling a product of some sort. No one's going to die. We're not doctors. This is a very low-stakes situation. The worst case scenario is the scene sucks and life will go on. Now, we don't want the scene to suck. It's good to be passionate. But, you know, I've seen some horrendous things in the industry, you know, people reducing people to tears, you know, shouting and screaming at them so much. I mean, because they haven't been ready a second before they were supposed to, you know, whatever it is. It was always over the minutia. So that's what it's like. But for me on this particular job, I was on cloud nine. I mean, just to be a part, even the smallest part of this amazing franchise. I mean, I'll show you how into it I am. Look at this. I don't know if you're going to show any video on this podcast, but this is TV.
Awesome.
So I've had TV Rex forever, and he used to sit by my TV. He's missing an arm now.
He is, or she is missing an arm.
She's now, yes, it's the queen. I've been a huge fan for years. So it was just a privilege to be a part of it. And it is great fun.
What you were filming was for like a video that someone's watching, right? So you're not on the set of the Prometheus. You are, what kind of set are you on?
It's so hard to say, because further to your comments about Prometheus, you thought there was a brilliant film within it. It had changed so much. And we sometimes get early access to a script that's in development then. But bear in mind, you know, these things, we're filming these years before they're released. And so much changes and so much is cut. Mm. So my understanding of where we were and what we were doing then is probably worlds apart from what it ended up being. But I felt very much like I knew what was going on. You are talking to me about a production that I shot, God, 20 years ago or something?
Prometheus came out 12 years ago.
I've obviously gone senile as well, thinking it was 20 years ago. So it was a long time ago. So forgive me if I can't remember the exact feelings on the day.
Now, did they let you know that your scene was going to be cut before the film came out, or how does that work?
No, I told my brother, who's a big Alien fan, and I said, come to this film. I'm in this film. My family, I don't think are terribly pleased about my acting work in general anyway. So it's not like they're huge fans of my work, but I said, come to this, because it's Prometheus and I'm going to be in it. And I made this big thing. And then, you know, we watched the film and of course I wasn't in it. It was quite embarrassing. But actually I didn't care, because, you know, it's one of my favorite aliens. I really liked it. So, so I wasn't too bothered. I think other people were more bothered. Maybe my brother was more bothered. I dragged into this film that he didn't.
Well, now you have a new movie coming out this year that you can drag him to.
Oh yeah, well, hopefully. Here's hoping.
I need to know why. What did we do wrong? Why do you hate us?
Did the Germans come out against us? David, continue. Tell him why I came.
Idag mannamai, gärna mortus städa, kuiva hon itam sastater kreda.
I mean, you have a foot in alien history and alien legacy. Not only were you a part of an alien film, but you're a part of the first sci-fi film that Ridley Scott directed since Blade Runner. So that's a big deal. You know, I mean, he came back to that genre, what, like 30 years later? It had been like over 30 years since he had directed a sci-fi. Was any of that, like, I don't know, again, what your set experience was like. I mean, obviously with sets, I've been on big sets before, lots of people there, lots of stuff going on. Was there like nerd buzz among like actors or people involved? Like, oh my God, we're in a Ridley Scott alien film? Or was it just
Can't not have a nerd buzz on an alien film. Yeah. I think you're allowed. I mean, generally you try to dull down the nerdness and pretend to be really cool, which isn't actually even lame. It's better just to be yourself, isn't it? But that's what you try to. You try to underplay it. Like, yes, not a big deal. I do cool shit all the time, yeah. You don't. You know, you do a lot of projects to pay your mortgage and they're not so cool and sexy. But Alien was definitely cool and sexy. Even, as I said, even despite being cut and, you know, being ripped off with the costume and all these funny things that happened, I wouldn't change it for the world. It was still one of the best experiences I've had.
That's great. So what's your life like now? Like, how are you in terms of like in the industry. I know when I was in England, I was there for the month of January, and I would watch TV at night with my hosts, Zay, who you've met.
Hey, I love Zay. How's she doing?
She's doing great. She's planning another convention for London at the end of June for the NeverEnding Story. Well, it's a fantasy con, whatever. It's another conversation.
Great film. We can talk about that another time. Yeah, that's one of my faves.
Yeah, me too. I love it. What's your life like now in terms of being an actor? I know I saw you on TV in commercials, like every other commercial featured you almost.
I have sort of become Captain Commercial. I don't know how that's come about. I've got to break that cycle. The problem with acting is this, you get what you put out there. So because I did some commercials, then I was just getting a lot of commercials back. Sometimes you've got to kind of create a project and put something that you want to be doing out there to kind of get the work you want, kind of laws of attraction. So yes, I've become Captain Commercial. That's been quite interesting. You can learn a lot from doing that. Build your confidence. I think it helps you a lot with the auditioning process, which is basically acting. You know, there's a fantastic interview with Clooney where he really, for me, nails what acting is, where he sort of says, look, you know, you're basically a professional auditioner. You will spend far more time casting and doing auditions than you ever will acting, because you're probably casting or auditioning once a day. And you go in, it's a very bizarre job, knowing that there's at less than 1 in 100 chance you're going to get it. And then the next day, you've got to go back, do the same amount of research for the job, get yourself all hyped up, pick yourself up, all the enthusiasm, and put yourself through that audition again, day in, day out, knowing the odds are you're not going to get it. And, you know, if you can, that's the real grind of acting. If you can do that and, you know, and you're okay with that and happy to live your life like that, then you've got a chance, I think, of being an actor. Because I think most people I know are good at acting in the industry. You know, they get so worried about that. They spend so much time on their craft and things that they actually are excellent actors. But it's the grind that's the hard bit. Getting your foot in the door, certainly. So anyway, so doing those. So yes, I've been doing a lot of commercials, but that's been quite good because it's kind of helped me. The nice thing about this job is that the feedback is kind of immediate. It's there. So if you do a good audition, you're going to get at least what we call penciled or option for the job. And if you don't, if you're constantly doing auditions and you're not getting anything back, well, then you know you're not doing something right, right? You've got to mix it up. It's that Einstein's definition of sanity, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. I mean, a lot of this job is outside of our control, but there's a very good, there was a good seminar actually by Mark Summers, who's a cast director here in the UK. And he said, your job as an actor is to get options, not to get the job, but to get options. He said, if I bring you in for an audition, it's because I think you're a good fit for it. And if you do a good audition, you will get options. You're always unlikely to get it because, you know, there can only be one, right? And then that's very nuanced. That depends on all sorts of things, how you fit in with the rest of the cast, availability, demographics. I mean, it's politics, economics. It's a very, very complex affair. And it's beyond you. You shouldn't worry about that. But you should go into an audition, I believe, and get optioned if you're good at what you do. And doing those commercials every day, I think, really helps you hone that craft at that and perfect that, which is now, but used to be in the room. Now it's become self-taping post-COVID because they worked out quite rightly. It's a lot cheaper way to see people. They don't have to hire a big expensive casting suite. They can just send out these instructions and you have to do it at home in your own time. Which can be quite tough. But there are upshots to that too. It means they're seeing more actors than they ever did before. Used to be a very closed shop. Now they will put through a few wild cards in there. They'll give some new names, some new faces a shot. So you can play that to your advantage. It's not all bad, certainly. Anyways, I've been doing that. As you said, it's been quite funny because currently, as we speak, there's quite a few TV commercials of me in. I did this funny thing for the Sidemen. I don't know how familiar you guys are with the Sidemen over there in LA.
I am not that familiar at all.
So the Sidemen are a bunch of YouTubers here in the UK. I would say arguably the biggest UK YouTubers. Their united following subscription is they have 170 million subscribers. Huge viewership. Yeah, it's massive. Yes. It's bigger than many networks. The most famous of them is known as KSI. with Jay, who you might know because he does a lot of boxing stuff now, and him, and he's released this drink called Prime, which has gone mad over here, but I don't know if it's reached you guys yet on the West Coast. Anyway, I did a thing for them early last year, as a improv actor. So what they do is they do these kind of hidden camera things, and this one was called 7-star versus 1-star hotel. So it's a bit like a kind of pop band, for a lack of a better word. So there's this group of guys that all, they've got a huge following. And for this video, half of them get to go to the 7-star hotel. I think it was the one and only in Dubai. And then half of them go to a 1-star hotel in England. But the 1-star hotel in England doesn't exist. We've made it. So they don't know what to expect. They know something's up because there's cameras there and they're mic'd up. They don't know what it is. So we created this hostel. And within the hostel, there were these ludicrous characters running it. And one of the directors sort of said to me, it would be really fun if we had a life drawing class put on in the hostel that the guys could do. And you could be the teacher, but could you come up with a really ridiculous character to be the art teacher? And I came up with this guy called Kashfa, who is loosely based on the industry I used to work with, actually, and a school friend who I've kind of merged together and made this love child out of. Anyway, so we did this character, and it was a surprise success. People really liked Kashfa, and I had no idea how big it was going to be at the time. And that was nice. But the thing is, they have a lot of great guests on the show, and there's every Sunday there's a new one. And I think kind of got lost in the matrix and we didn't know what to do with it. Fast forward to this year, this month, and we did it's last month now. And Kashfa got to make his return in the winter holiday episode on YouTube. You can watch it if you want. And that was quite a big deal because to actually have a guest come back, and they gave me way more screen time. And this was a feature film episode. It was 3 hours long, and about half an hour of which was Kashfa. I was very delighted to see. And they even very kindly credited me at the end, which they generally have a policy of never doing with their guests. I think they want to sort of suggest that they're all real. So it was nice that they actually said, you know, Dan Dewhurst as Kashfa. So that's happened. And there's a lot of kind of buzz about that and where to go from here. The fans want another episode. And it's all quite exciting. And I feel very privileged to do this job and very lucky that I'm able to make a living out of doing it. But there are other things in life that I think I'm more passionate about. I'm quite big into philanthropy and nature and things like that. I think as we get older, we want our jobs to be more purposeful. We kind of want to have a purpose in life. And this felt really good because I just had all these, I don't even know how they found me, because initially I've now set up a YouTube channel for the character, but I hadn't at the time. But I had all these people DMing me, telling me like how much joy this, and it is the most ridiculous character, this character I've made had brought them, and just do something that made that many people smile just felt really nice and kind of worthwhile. It's quite hard times at the moment with everything that's going on in the world and quite heavy and dark, and it was nice to bring people a bit of levity, even if it was in the most stupid of ways. So that was nice. I'm quite excited about that. If people want to check out Kashfa, they can. It's just YouTube at Kashfa's his channel, and it's spelled CASHPUR, Kashfa. Or you can find it through my Instagram as well, which is just at Dan Dewhurst, Dewhurst with an I, not a U. So that's going on.
That's great that you've shared with people where they can follow you. That's awesome. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, this was Dan kind of sideswiped me with this information. Him and I have talked since we met about a year and a half ago. And of course, I'm, you know, run this alien podcast. And he's like, oh, yeah, I was on Prometheus. I'm like, hold on. What? So it's great to be able to talk about that and to share your experiences as a fellow fan of the alien films. And also, you know, as you know, you work in the industry. That's what you do every day. And that I can imagine is a challenge. But thank you so much for sharing sort of the ins and outs of what that's like for you.
It is a challenge, but, you know, it has these nice moments like talking to you now. You know, it has its bonuses.
Well, thank you so much. We will.
Cheers, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And happy Alien Day, everyone. And
happy Alien Day.
Thank you. To find out more information about Perfect Organism, the Alien Saga podcast, please go to www.perfectorganism.com. If you would like to support the show, please go to www.perfectorganism.com/support. Thank you.